No way he could fight these things, and no way he could run from them. The Spiky had been hanging around directly above them and wearing this mask, and also wielding a whip that was lying next to where he had fallen, having dropped from the Spiky's hand after he'd stabbed it. Presumably, therefore... Snaggy pulled the mask over his head, cursing the Spiky's strange head shape and unnatural eye positioning as he did so. Then he grabbed the whip and screamed as loud and as feral as he could manage. It was simple small creature tactics. Make a loud noise and do whatever you could to convince the bigger things that you weren't an easy meal. What Snaggy would have given for that skyboard so he could get properly out of their reach? That was long gone now, though, so he had to make the best of what he had. The creatures started backwards, clearly taken aback by what their senses were telling them. The thing in front of them was certainly food-sized, but it didn't sound like food, and what was more, it didn't smell like food. The largest ventured forwards again, still uncertain of how to react. Snaggy took a deep breath and cracked the whip. It wasn't an ideal weapon for him. He lacked the height to get the proper action. However, long experience of being under the command of runt herds had given him at least a theoretical understanding of how whips worked, or he'd never have learned when and how fast to duck. The length of it snaked out and caught the largest beast across the nose. The monster reared back, snarling in pain and confusion. Snaggy panicked for a moment, certain that he was about to be torn limb from quivering limb, but some instinct pushed him forward. The same instinct that had driven him to dream of becoming de Grotbos in the first place. The one that said that once you started moving, it was better to keep moving in the same direction than to stop and wait for all your bad choices to catch up with you. He ran forward, ducked under a swipe of the monster's claws that was more reflexive than aggressive, and launched himself at its back. He grabbed hunks of purplish fur and hauled himself up while it lumbered around in a circle, trying to work out what was going on, until he was sitting between its massive shoulder blades. The others in the pack were watching perplexedly, clearly not quite sure what had happened and not yet making any move to reach out and either swat him off or cram him into their own mouth and start chewing, which left Snaggy Littletooth riding considerably higher than was normal, with a good view of the fight going off around him and astride a towering monster over which he appeared to have at least nominal control.
All right, then, he said,
a grin spreading over his face as the adrenaline coursed through his veins and his thumping heartbeat served to remind him that somehow or other he wasn't dead yet. He yanked on the monster's ear with one hand and showed it the whip in its peripheral vision with the other, and it turned in the direction he was pulling.
Yes! Oh, yes! They laughed at Snaggy Littletooth, but who's laughing now, eh? Who's laughing now?
The next quarter revolution of the monster brought an interesting tableau into view. The massive, somehow even more massive than before, shape of Uftak Blackhawk, wielding the snazhammer as he fought not one, not two, but five spiky bosses coming at him from all angles. This was destiny. This was fate. This was Gawk and Mawk presenting Snaggy with a gift and daring him to take it.
Lads,
Snaggy said, drunk on power. He raised his whip and pointed it at the brawl.
Lunchtime!
Chapter 28. Uftak Blackhawk was fighting all five of them, and while it wasn't necessarily winning, it certainly wasn't losing as quickly or as emphatically as Dimera Thrace would have liked. Five of the most dangerous combatants in the galaxy, three Archons, a Master Homunculus, and a Grand Succubus, a rank only achieved through being one of the greatest gladiatorial fighters ever to set foot in Kamora, should have overwhelmed any enemy in short order, even one as physically imposing as this massive brute. That hadn't happened, and what was even more frustrating was that Dimera was pretty sure she knew why it hadn't happened, but could do little to fix it. The simple fact was that she and her nominal allies were not used to working as a team. Zuzuli had long ago left behind the sort of arena combat in which the rank-and-file witches engaged, where one group would fight against another or against a squad of captured monkey or a ferocious beast. If the succubus took to the arena now, it was to fight by herself, perhaps against a plethora of foes or against one exceptionally deadly opponent in a display bout or an underling challenging for her status. In open battle, she went and killed where she would, and the rest of her cult did their best to keep up. Combat was now the ultimate expression of Zazuli Mindrex's ego, and there was no room for compromise. She expected others to either be doing as she wished or to get out of her way. The rest of them are no better. Maculatix was as jerkily unpredictable in a fight as he was in matters of politics or strategy, and Dimera had to pull a cut more than once because the master of the Coven of the Red Harvest suddenly appeared in front of her, making an attack of his own. Dalgar was a vainglorious fool, overeager for revenge for his previous humiliation by the monster, yet clearly, to Dimera's eyes at least, scared of the consequences if he actually got too close. As a result, his contributions mainly consisted of a relentless slew of vituperous curses, some half-hearted blows with his blade that never came close to reaching the orc's flesh, and a great deal of posturing and getting in the way. Of all the other four, and rather surprisingly, Sistril Verne was the one with which Dimera was able to work the most effectively. However, even that was far from perfect. They were almost awkward around each other, often having the same idea at the same moment and nearly colliding, or otherwise inconveniencing themselves.
"I had an angle," Sistril raged, as Dimera dragged him backwards.
"And the orc would have had your head in return," Dimera snapped, as the massive hammer whistled through the spot where Sistril had been standing a moment before.
"And why would you care about that?"
Sistril demanded, shaking his arm free from Dimera's grasp. He seemed unreasonably angry for someone who had just been saved from decapitation, but Dimera understood. She would also be galled to feel she owed something to a rival.
"Your assistance is still required to defeat this menace," she said crisply. "Besides," a voice added, in a similarly factual tone, "your face is aesthetically pleasing, and it would be inconsiderate of you to get it destroyed." It took half a moment for Dimera to realise that it was in fact her who had said that as well, and that her mouth had run on far in advance of her brain. A flurry of unfamiliar emotions ran through her in the time it took for startled comprehension to spread across Sistriel's face, and then she dived back into the fray with the determination of one for whom immediate obliteration was no longer the worst possible option. The trouble was, Ulftak Blackhawk moved faster and with more precision than should be possible for anything that size, which is not to say that it was faster than the Drukhari with which it was battling, but combined with its great size, strength and reach, it was fast enough. A mere scratch from Dimera's venom blade, a replacement from her armory for the one the orc had previously shattered, would be enough to incapacitate most foes, although the deeper the wound, the faster the poison would spread. However, Ulftak was so big, she was not sure that she could rely on even the virulent toxins that coated her weapon to perform as she would normally expect. A glancing blow from the orc's energized hammer, on the other hand, could be quite enough to debilitate her given the force with which it was being wielded. Zazuli attacked with a scream, lashing out with her agonizer. The whip's micro-serrated coils wrapped around the orc's forearm, which should have been enough to connect to its nervous system and overload it with pain stimuli, but Ulftak merely grunted and used its other arm to swing its hammer in a wide circle, over which Zazuli vaulted as effortlessly and gracefully as if she were performing an acrobatic routine. Dimera lunged in, seeking to bury her venom blade between the monster's ribs while it was distracted, and her legs were taken out from under her. She landed on her side, just as one of Ulftak's enormous feet swept past above her in an unsighted kick that could have shattered most of the bones in her sternum. She rolled aside desperately as the orc brought its hammer down at her, then was tugged clear by her ankles. "What?" she began, then stopped as she realised she had been pulled almost into the arms of the crouching Sistril Verne. The other Archon's long-hafted spear was immediately obvious as the reason why Dimera's legs had disappeared from under her.
"Turnabout is fair play," Sistril said, with a wicked grin. I too cannot allow my ally to die yet. And in addition, he added, leaning close, I have tasted pain and despair many times from another Drukhari, and while mortification is not as nourishing, it has the benefit of novelty. Perhaps I shall have to trick you into accidentally complimenting me again.
The accusation of imperfection stung Dimera into action, and she rolled away and up to her feet. Accidentally, I can assure you I do not make mistakes.
Then your words were honestly meant, Sistril said,
and there was the briefest flicker in the icy wall of his composure.
Of course, Dimera said.
She saw an opening, and long experience at politicking and preying on the insecurities of others made her strike for it instinctively before she had even considered her words.
Why, do you doubt yourself?
Do not be ridiculous, Sistriel snapped. I am beautiful, and clearly you would be attracted to me.
Then we are in agreement, Dimera said, even as a small part of her brain wondered what in the name of the living muse was going on. Sistriel readied his spear again and nodded towards where Uftak Blackhawk had just taken one of Maculatix's arms off with his axe blade, leaving the homunculus scuttling backwards and cursing.
We should probably...
Yes, Dimera said, with considerable certainty and no little relief. They attacked together, Sistriel probing high with his spear while Dimera went in low. Uftak had been battering Maculatix backwards while fending off jabs from Zuzuli's glaive and largely ignoring the ineffective Dalgar, but the huge orc broke off its pursuit of the homunculus as the two archons began to press it from behind. It whirled around with a stentorian bellow and slammed its hammer down. Dimera and Sistriel dodged to either side, and although the orc swatted Sistriel's answering spear thrust away, this time Dimera's blade penetrated its defences and the point parted cloth to dig into the creature's right thigh. Uftak made its counterstroke, but Dimera was already rolling away, although the energy field that crackled around the head of the hammer passed so close to her head that her hair began to smoulder in the moment before she got clear.
Grand work,
Maculatix cackled, lunging for the orc's back with his flesh gauntlet poised. However, the master homunculus had miscalculated. A normal enemy would be incapacitated within seconds, but an orc of this size was no normal enemy. Uftak didn't even look. It just rammed the haft of its hammer backwards, so hard and so fast that the blunt tip of it slammed straight into Maculatix's chest, punched through his ribcage, and emerged through his spine. Even a homunculus's resilience and immunity to pain had its limits. Maculatix sagged like a marionette with its string severed, his expression one more of shock than anything else. Uftak shook his body back off the hammer's haft, then used the weapon's head to flatten Maculatix's skull against the ground.
One down, the huge orc grunted in the Monkey tongue.
Then it staggered and dropped to one knee.
Now you die, beast, Zuzuli snarled, charging forwards.
Dimera went with her, venom blade held ready, with Sistriel Vern at her side, until Sistriel cried out and staggered and dropped with Dalgar's blade between his ribs.
No!
Dimera shouted, aghast. Sistriel was too powerful, too perfect to be brought low by Dimera's wretch of a brother, and yet there Dalgar was, twisting his foul sword in the wound and relishing in the agony he was bringing forth. The blade gave off a tangible aura of spite now it had tasted flesh, and Dimera could hear its soundless laughter. There was a Drukhari soul bound into the weapon, lending its viciousness to Dalgar's own.
Come, sister, Dalgar shouted gleefully. Let the succubus have her kill. We can take control of the Cabal of the Falling Knight, and power will be ours in any case.
No,
Dimera repeated, more quietly and attacked. She knew the look in her brother's eyes. His ambition would not be slaked even by subsuming the Falling Knight into their ranks, which would be no easy feat in any case, since Sistriel had various subordinate archons of his own who would want to stake their claim to the Cabal rather than see it taken over by outsiders. But Dimera's decision was not predicated solely on the knowledge that it would only be a matter of time before Dalgar turned his blade on her. Sistriel Verne was not just aesthetically pleasing. There was something about him that Dimera admired, and she wanted time to study that feeling, to examine it and pull it apart so that she knew exactly how another might take advantage of her. She could not do that if the object of her attentions was dead. It took Dalgar a moment to understand her intent, so caught up was he in his premature triumph. He only withdrew his blade from Sistriel's side to parry Dimera's first strike at the last moment, and then he was backpedaling before her attacks, Sistriel's blood flicking around as his blade darted from side to side.
"This is folly," Dalgar spat. "You would slay your own blood over this rival?" "Do not pretend that the bonds of blood would hold you," Dimera snarled. "And yes, Dalgar, because rival or not, he is worth 10 of you."
"What are you idiots doing?"
Zazuli screamed from somewhere behind Dimera.
"The beast is regaining its strength,"
Dalgar screamed. For a moment, Dimera thought it was in horror at Uftak's recovery, but that seemed unlikely. The huge orc would have to get through Zazuli and Dimera before it could reach him. Then she heard the rapid, heavy tread of feet behind her and threw herself to one side on instinct. The clawed fiend tore through the air where she had just been standing. Dalgar fled before another, trying to ward it off with sweeps of his blade. The presence of the fiends was not a complete surprise. They were huge and vicious arena creatures, often goaded into battle by beastmasters, although they had a tendency to fly into berserk rages that could endanger allies and foes alike. But what was definitely unusual was that the one which had just tried to attack Dimera had one of the orc's small slave caste riding it, wearing a stolen beastmaster's mask and wielding a whip. Not just any beastmaster's mask, in fact. Dimera recognised it from when she had spoken to Uftak in the dungeons.
"Carthind was slain by one of you," she scoffed as the slave, Grot,
hauled on the side of the fiend's head and managed to bring it around to face her. The beast roared, but Dimera was quicker. Her blade slashed out twice, carving an X shape into the hard muscle of its chest. There was no delay in the toxins taking effect here, and the fiend staggered while the grot on its back clung on desperately. Dimera risked a look behind her. Uftak Blackhawk, bleeding from various gashes inflicted by Zazuli, clubbed down another clawed fiend with its hammer. Zazuli herself fended off a second, expertly severing its spine with her glaive, but the moment of inattention cost her. Even her preternatural agility and reflexes were insufficient to avoid the next blow Uftak launched, aimed directly at her. It was very hard to land a blow on a succubus, but when you were as strong as an orc the size of Uftak Blackhawk, you only needed to land one. The hammer's axe head carved Zazuli Mindrex, grand succubus of the Cult of the Deathly Sorrow, into two separate pieces. She hit the ground at the same time as the clawed fiend Dimera had just cut with her blade. The grot that had been riding on its back scurried past Dimera, running for the massive shape of Uftak Blackhawk. The huge orc was clearly not quite fully recovered from the toxins Dimera had introduced into its system, but its red eyes latched onto her with recognition and malice. A scream made her look back around again, only to see Dalgar transfixed by the blade of Sistriel's spear. Her brother had brought down the fiend that had attacked him and had been coming for Dimera while her attention was on the orc, but Verne had stabbed him from where he lay on the ground, and his spear's head had found the gap between Dalgar's armour plates to lodge just above his hip. Dimera batted Dalgar's half-hearted parry away, disarming him in the process, and plunged her blade into the corresponding gap on the other side. Dalgar spluttered and collapsed to his knees as the venom began to take hold. He was no longer a threat. He would be paralysed in moments and dead within a minute. Dimera harboured no regrets. Her brother had been a rival from the moment he was born. He had also been useful enough just to outweigh it. Now he had outlived his usefulness, although, it had to be said, not by very long.
which was no guarantee that Dimera would survive much longer. With her brother dealt with, she turned her attention back to Uftak Blackhawk. Sestrial Vern had wrenched his spear back out of Dalgar with a cry of pain at the effort it took him, and was trying to lever himself up to his feet, but he would be of little use in a fight save as a brief and barely mobile distraction. Uftak was bleeding and slightly poisoned, but merely looked all the more invulnerable for it as the creature took its first step towards her. It had taken the best that 5 Drukhari lords had to offer and had, for various reasons, outlasted them. It was an Arrakia, a child of destruction, and at this moment it looked as inevitable as a Drukhari's final death. Something that, of course, any Drukhari would try to ward off for as long as possible. "You said you wanted to get back out into the galaxy," Dimera shouted in low Gothic, readying her blade. "To fight your mech lord and take command. Why not do that? Why not just leave?" Uftak paused in its stride, worked its mouth and spat out a tooth.
"Working on it."
Dimera's brow creased in confusion, but at least while she was conversing with the beast, it wasn't attacking. Perhaps it lacked the brain power for both. Working on it. What in the name of all the stars and souls does that mean?
"Dimera," Sistriel said weakly. "Look up."
Dimera had no intention of taking her eyes off Uftak, but then something began to press in on her eardrums. It was a noise, gradually starting to make itself heard over the din of battle, but it was something else as well. A change of pressure, a massive displacement of air. And with it came a shadow. Certain that she was making a mistake, but unable to ignore what was happening, Dimera looked around and up. What she saw took a moment to process, but when her brain had caught up with her eyes, it sent a cleansing wave of pure fury coursing through her.
"That is Heart's End," she breathed,
looking up at the distinctive wasp-waisted shape of her flagship descending towards them. The vessel's thrusters were firing, and it was somehow navigating the gravity well of Port Tavar, although not with any degree of grace. Its engines were overcharged, and what should have been minor corrections were being accomplished with clumsy bursts that sent it rocking drunkenly back and forth. It almost looked as if it was being flown by...
"The boffin needed a bit of time to get himself sorted, I guess," Uftak rumbled. "But the lad's come up with the goods."
"You've taken my ship!"
Dimera yelled, rounding on the orc that was grinning at her, infuriatingly.
"Ain't your ship no more," Uftak said. "But there, that's our way out of here. All we need now is to get on it and find a way to get through that gate thingy right up there."
Dimera looked up again. Far above, where her ship should have been at anchor, she could just make out the burning wrecks of other Drukhari vessels, and beyond them was the port gate, which led out of Port Tavar and into the wider webway. The Heart's End had been taken, and it had wrought havoc on the other ships berthed around it before it had come careering down here in search of its new masters. She would undoubtedly have been informed of this, or even noticed it for herself, had the orcs not been creating so much chaos across the entire area.
"Of course,"
Uftak continued, his voice somehow roughening even further.
"Last time we spoke, I was talking about making you suffer. I ain't as fancy as you spiky kids with your skinny little knives and your pain jabbers. But if you want to keep us here, then I guess I ain't going to have anything better to do."
"If you stay here, then you will be worn down and slaughtered piece by piece," Dimera spat. "You and all your followers will die."
"So will you and a lot of yours, and we ain't the ones scared of dying,"
Uftak replied, spinning its hammer.
"Make your choice, Spikey, because that's a big old gun on that ship what used to be yours, and I reckon the boffin can have a lot of fun with it before he crashes."
Void Breaker, The largest dark lance ever crafted, and surely the cause of death for many of the ships now burning in the zero-gravity anchorage far above. Dimera thought about what that weapon might do, were it to be discharged here. It could annihilate the arena and everything in it in short order, for starters. Losing her flagship would be like losing a limb, but limbs could be regrown for the Drukhari nobility. The most powerful succubus and homunculus in the realm were dead, and the Archon she had considered her closest rival appeared to be an ally beyond all Drukhari norms, ready to stand and die with her. All she needed to do was to get the orcs out of Port Tavar, and the authority she'd craved could still be hers.
"You need a way through the gate," she said,
her voice hoarse in her throat.
"You need one of us."
"If that's what it takes," Uftek said, "it'll be easier than that other way I come up with before."
Dimera reached a decision. She reached into a belt pouch and pulled out a tiny vial of sleek black glass, then knelt beside Dalgar's spasming form. His helmet was the work of a moment to remove. The face beneath was deathly pale, and he was foaming at the mouth as his internal organs failed. Death was imminent, or would have been, had Dimera not had the antidote to her blade's venom to hand. She broke the tip off the vial and emptied the contents into her brother's mouth. It dripped between his teeth and flowed over his swelling tongue, and he had just enough consciousness left to recognize what was going on and swallow. The antidote took effect nearly as quickly as the venom had, and his shaking began to subside almost instantly. Dimera didn't wait for him to recover fully, even though he would be weak for some time to come from the poison ravaging his body. She picked him up and threw him towards Uftek, and he stumbled and collapsed into a pile at the massive orc's feet.
"Take him," she said. "He'll need to feed on something's pain if you want him to survive for long, but I couldn't care less if he does or not," she added.
"Something's pain," Uftek repeated.
He grabbed the grot that had been cowering behind his leg, which tried to make a break for freedom far too late and was snared by a hand as big as it was.
"Reckon we can manage that. In fact," Uftek added with a grin, looking to its left, "that gives me an idea."
Dimera was not about to ask the orc what the idea was, but nor was she certain what was going to happen now. Were the beasts actually going to try to land the Heart's End? The ship had never been intended to manoeuvre in gravity, let alone make planetfall, even in an artificial environment like Port Tavar. Besides which, it was immense. Dimera was not sure that it could fit inside the arena, and orc piloting had always seemed to be more a matter of luck than of judgment. Then Uftek, the grot in its hand, and her brother flared brightly. Dalgar's expression drew into a rictus of horror for a moment as he realised what was about to happen, and then they disappeared.
"They're teleporting again,"
Sistriel rasped, leaning on his spear.
"How did they build one so quickly?"
Dimera demanded of the empty air, turning to look up at the Heart's End.
"And out of what? Did they just haul a load of their junk aboard my..."
She broke off as light flared around them, again and again and again. Entire groups of orcs disappeared in the middle of a fight. Vehicles that had been there one moment were gone the next. Drukhari, recognising the deadly occurrences for what they were, scrambled desperately away from any nearby orcs in an effort to avoid being dragged through the warp with them. Most were successful. Some were not, and their despairing screams, cut off almost as soon as they began, were nearly enough to make Dimera feel sorry for them. Still, Uftek might have a few other candidates to use to get through the Webway Gate if Dalgar's soul had been torn from his body by demons during his unexpected trip, which at least reduced the likelihood of the orc returning and looking for a new victim. In under a minute, the vast majority of the orcs were gone. Some of the larger walkers had been left, presumably because it would have taken too much power to move them, rather than because the orcs had carefully measured the space available in any individual cargo bay aboard the Heart's End and found it lacking.
Dead orcs had been left as well, but they were not the only green-skinned shapes still on the surface of the Arena of Deathly Sorrow. A very large group of grots gradually realised that not only were they now alone in the midst of the enemy, but that they weren't going anywhere either. Above them all, the Heart's End began a rather shaky turn, pointing its nose back up towards the port gate. The grots, it seemed, were staying behind. Orcs might not feel much pain or much fear, but their diminutive slaves were a very different matter. For Drukhari, who had been fighting for their lives a moment before, many of whom had taken grievous wounds in the process, the grots were like a cup of water placed before someone dying of thirst. Here, at last, were victims that were unlikely to offer much resistance. Deadly weapons were discarded, and knives were drawn that were nearly as sharp as the smiles on the faces of those wielding them. Dimera inspected Sistriel's wound. It was deep, and Dalgar's cursed blade had caused it to fester already, but it was not fatal. "A brace of those wretches should meet your needs, I believe," she said, addressing the other Archon. "And I am sure we can find a lesser homunculus to assist. Indeed, given Maculatix's fate, I suspect there will be many who would wish to ally themselves with the power that we could become together."
"You would help me?" Sistriel asked, wincing in pain.
"Of course," Dimera said. "Lord Verne, Port Tavar is ours for the taking, battered though it might be. After that, who is to say that our talents combined could not take us considerably further?" "Assuming, that is," she said, looking Sistriel in the eye with rather more effort than should have been required for an Archon to whom projecting confidence was second nature.
"You wish to enter into such a partnership?"
Sistriel's eyes searched Dimera's face. In search of deception, or in search of something else?
"Yes,"
the Archon of the Falling Knight said after a long moment.
"Yes, I would. I believe that would be very beneficial to us both."
Something skittered inside Dimera's chest. Her ambition, recognizing another opportunity to increase her power. Certainly that, and nothing else. Chapter 29.
"You don't want me to bring that big bunch of grots up, boss?"
the boffin asked, as he swung the spiky ship around.
"Nah, leave them,"
Uftek said.
"They'll keep the spikies busy for a bit and make sure they don't try anything fancy like shooting us down. Course," he added, "it's a bit weird how so many of them were all in the same place without any runt herds around."
He looked at Snaggy Littletooth, who was staring back out of the window with an expression that hovered halfway between horror and relief.
"You know anything about that runt?"
Snaggy jumped and backed away from the window.
"Me, boss? No, boss. Don't listen to him, boss,"
a new voice piped up, and Nisquick hurried into the bridge area.
"I was there. Snaggy got a whole bunch of them fired up and ready to fight for the war. It was amazing."
"Is that so?"
Uftak said, narrowing his eyes. On the one hand, grots who were actually prepared to fight were a sight more useful than grots usually were. On the other hand, it sounded suspicious.
"Nisquick,"
Snaggy said, in a voice that could have stripped paint.
"Thank the gods you made it out. I thought you was dead."
"Not me,"
Nisquick said, happily oblivious to Snaggy's tone.
"And guess what else got teleported up?"
The little grot turned and whistled, then shrieked in alarm as Princess bounded in with jaws slavering.
"You sulking idiot!"
Snaggy yelled, as the squig chased the two grots around and out into the corridor beyond.
"Why'd you call it? I thought the boss would want to know his squig was okay."
Uftak grunted and turned away. Everything was back to normal there, at any rate, although he had a nagging feeling he should be keeping a close eye on Snaggy Littletooth. He immediately dismissed the thought as nonsense. He was an orc, and a massive one at that. Snaggy was only a grot. What harm could it possibly do except to itself? The spiky that the other spiky had thrown at him was curled up in a ball, panting and whimpering. Uftak prodded it with his boot, waiting to see if it pulled knives out of anywhere and lunged for him.
Oi!
This garnered no response, which irked Uftak. What was the git so scared of? Had it never been teleported before? He reached down, grabbed it by its head and hoisted it bodily into the air. The spiky wailed and flailed, then froze as he tightened his grip warningly.
Listen carefully,
Uftak said in Humi.
Last time you tangled with me, I left you without an arm and squashed that. Obviously, that ain't enough to off one of you lot, so I'm guessing there's quite a bit I could do to you before you die from it. And as I understand it, you lot really don't want to die, so you ain't going to be looking for a quick way out. What's more, he added, if it looks like you're going to die, I could let the pain boys have a go at you, see if they can keep you around. Not even orcs trust the pain boys, so I think something like you might want to avoid that. Am I right?
The spiky didn't speak, but something about its expression suggested to Uftak that whatever spirit it had was breaking, if not already shattered. He'd fought as much. It had yelled a lot when they'd been fighting, but didn't seem to dare go near him. It was basically a grot, just taller and a lot less green.
Or, he continued, if you piss me off, I could just teleport you somewhere. Don't think you'd like that. Maybe I could just teleport you nowhere.
The spiky's eyes widened in horror.
See, now we're getting somewhere, Uftak told it, grinning. So here's the deal, spiky. We're taking this ship out of that gate thing up in the sky, and we're leaving. Then I'm off to have a conversation with me boss about who's really in charge now. But that ain't none of your business. All you gots to do is make sure that gate opens for us. If you can do that, we're good. Can you do it?
The spiky tried to nod. However, given it was being held up by its head, it didn't have a great deal of success.
Yes, it said, sullenly.
Say, yes, boss,
Uftak told it. The spiky glared at him, but only for a moment. Once he began tightening his grip a little, it hissed at him, but then bared its teeth and spoke through them.
Yes, boss.
There's a good spiky,
Uftak said.
Now I'm going to let go of you. Get us through the gate and we're laughing. Try anything cunning and I'll rip both your arms off this time and put you in a cage for the grots to poke.
He opened his hand. The spiky dropped and landed with the grace inherent to its kind, but backed off and put its back against the wall rather than stab anyone. Even though this ship belonged to its kind, it already looked out of place. The boffin had rigged up his own control systems to make the alien machine do what he wanted, and crude levers, large buttons and trailing wires abounded.
So you made it go then,
Uftak said, switching back into Orcish.
Good job. We got all manners of go,
the boffin replied, beaming. Then his smile faded.
Except one. I've figured out what most of their stuff does, but the spikies ain't got nothing what looks even a little bit like a warp drive. They must use their tunnel things to fly anywhere they want to go.
Uftak grunted.
I just want to get out of this place. Can't be bothered with tunnels and that. Okay, so we get a new ship as soon as possible. One that can go into the warp so we can find a mech lord.
He paused as another thought struck him.
Did you get Mogrot up? Pretty sure, yeah,
the boffin said.
He was with Vizek's lot. Good,
Uftak said, nodding with satisfaction.
The git owes me a new truck.
He pointed at a light that had just started flashing urgently on one of the control panels.
What's that mean?
That is...
The boffin checked a gizmo that was plugged into about 3 different things.
Temporal instability. Means there's some weird warpy stuff going on. Somewhere behind us by the looks of it. What? Like chaos gribblies and that?
Uftak asked, wondering if they'd left the Spikies arena too soon.
Yeah, might be,
the boffin said.
Reality might be coming apart just a little bit, that sort of thing. We did a lot of teleporting, and I don't think this place is exactly real, if you get me drift. Not like planets.
He flicked the instrument.
Might come to nothing. Want to check it out just in case.
Uftak thought about it for a few seconds, then shook his head.
Nah, chaos gribblies is fun, but killing them ain't exactly satisfying. What with how they just dissolve? Let's find a proper ship with an engine what'll get us through the warp. Whatever you say, boss,
the boffin said, feeding more power to the engines and accelerating their climb.
Seems a shame to let the Spikies have all the fun, though.
Uftak grinned. Chaos gribblies tended to be fairly single-minded, were often quite hard to hurt, and rarely seemed to pay much attention to thoughts of their own mortality.
Oh, don't worry,
he told the boffin.
I don't think they're going to be having much fun.
Chapter 30. The star was all big and red, and near it, as stars went, which meant it was still a long way away by any other standards, was another that was smaller and more yellowy. 3 planets orbited the big red star, and it was around the central one of these, a green and blue rocky world, that the ships of the Tekwa were clustered. There didn't seem to be much in the way of void combat going on. If whomever the Wa was fighting had possessed ships at any point, they'd either been destroyed or had fled. The surface of the planet was a different matter, though. Even from a distance, Uftak could see the grey pool that obscured great swathes of the world. A lot of stuff was burning, which was a pretty reliable sign of a good fight. It had been a bit of a trek to get here. They'd found an exit large enough for the Spiky ship that had brought them out not far from a Humi shipyard. The Humies, it seemed, were not expecting a Spiky ship, either piloted or crewed by orcs, and the shipyard's defenders had been overwhelmed in short order. However, it had taken de Boffin and his undermechs a while to hack together enough different bits to make a ship that an orc wouldn't be embarrassed to fly in, so they hadn't been as swift in answering de Mechlord's call as Uftak would have liked. Then they'd had to follow the signal from the shouty box back to where it came from, which involved flying through the warp, and the warp could be zogging difficult when it wanted to be. Orcs were mostly happy to go wherever it took them, safe in the knowledge that they'd probably find a fight wherever they emerged, but Uftak had a specific destination in mind, and that always took a bit longer. Thankfully, it seemed that the Wa hadn't moved on anywhere, and now here he was in his own ship. It was a cruiser. Since they'd not had the time or the resources to make anything truly massive and impressive, but it was big enough. Uftak had called it Star Smasher, because that sounded quite killy.
How's it going in there, Spiky?
Uftak asked, rattling the cage that hung on one wall. The Spiky inside, Dalgar apparently, whimpered. It had thought it was cunning by waiting until they were involved in the battle at the Humi shipyard before trying to stab Uftak, but it hadn't stabbed hard enough. It still had both of its arms, but it also had a nasty-looking series of gashes across its face, as though inflicted by a clawed hand.
Please, the Spiky burbled, still curled up in a ball. Please don't go through the warp again.
It had not been Uftak, or indeed any other orc, that had inflicted its injuries.
Ain't a promise I can make you,
Uftak said cheerily, and the Spiky whined. Uftak moved away from it and began studying the readouts in front of him.
Where's the Morgue's hammer?
He asked. The bridge of the Star Smasher was a heavily adapted Humi one, but de Boffin had left a lot of their instruments in place. Say what you want about Humies. At least they weren't Spikies.
They made devices you could understand without being a mech boy and running it through a bunch of wires first.
That one,
the boffin said, pointing.
All right then, just like we planned,
Uftak said, and cracked his knuckles. Most war bosses would be down on the planet at the heart of the scrap, but the mech lord was a bit weird. He liked to teleport down in his mega gargant or just stay in orbit and blow stuff up with his ship's guns. That was what happened when you had a mech boy in charge, Uftak supposed, particularly a Bad Moon's mech boy. Uftak was a Bad Moon and appreciated a good bit of Dacca as much as the next orc, but there was a time and a place for it. You had to get your hands dirty, or how did anyone know you were really the boss? He leaned over and pressed the on switch on the shouter.
This is Uftak Blackhawk on the Star Smasher. Any of you kids listening?
The speakers erupted in noise. Some of it was orc captains who recognised Uftak's name or his voice and greeted him enthusiastically, or told him to zog off again just as enthusiastically, or often both, one after another. A lot of it was just noise. Orcs didn't hold with the notion of staying quiet, unless they were blood axes, so if an orc had a way of making noise, he would usually be using it. If he had a way of broadcasting that noise far and wide to anyone listening, or unable to not listen, so much the better. Then a new voice cut through, deeper and more powerful, and not sounding best pleased.
That you, Uftak? You decided to join us then?
Back in the day, Uftak might not have recognised sarcasm when it was directed at him. Now, however, his brain was easily developed enough to know what it was, and he didn't much appreciate it.
Well, you asked so nice, he said.
It might have just been his imagination, but he didn't think that the voice coming out of his own mouth was any lighter in pitch or timbre than the mech lord's, which suggested that he was easily the same size as the biggest big mech now. The slight pause before the mech lord answered suggested that he'd noticed it too.
And what loot have you got for me? Took you long enough to get here, so I'm hoping it's going to be worth the wait. Me too,
Uftak said, with complete honesty. He'd picked the Mork's hammer out by eye now, a particular shape and set of lights in orbit over the planet beneath that was starting to turn casually towards the Star Smasher as though welcoming it to the group. There was nothing between the two ships, and Uftak had a feeling that the mech lord was ordering his heavy guns to be ready to open fire, just in case.
So, boss, he said casually, you want to come over and check on what I got for you? This ship's got something well special on it, and you're going to want to see it up close.
There was a pause, then...
All right, I'll come and look at my new ship. Stay where you are.
Uftak bristled at that. His new ship. But he held his peace. Thinking, that was the key. It had got him this far in one form or another, and it could take him a bit further. He looked out of the viewport, wondering how long it would be before the Mork's hammer came alongside them. Or would the mech lord just leave his ship where it was, get into a boarding craft and come over like that?
Boss,
the boffin said, wrinkling his brow at a whirring dial.
We're getting a massive power spike from the Mork's hammer.
Uftak grunted. That could mean anything when the mech lord and his ship was concerned.
Are they charging up their guns? Don't think so,
the boffin said, scratching his head.
Looks more like...
The air pressure suddenly increased dramatically, and Uftak's ears popped. He whirled around as the air on the bridge began to shimmer, and the boffin's various spanners scrambled out of the way. They knew what was coming. The distortion resolved into half a dozen blocky shapes, which snapped into an almost too sharp reality. Then, with a stink of ozone, the biggest big mech himself stood on the bridge of the Star Smasher, along with a group of orcs Uftak loosely recognised as the mech lord's most trusted underlings. He was immense, decked out in proper Bad Moon's black and yellow. One arm of his mighty mega armour terminated in a custom combi weapon with multiple barrels and various bizarre-looking ammunition feeds, and the other hand clutched the shock hammer.
his tri-headed weapon that could literally knock chunks of his enemies into the warp. He dripped with trophies and gadgetry, for the Metclawed had an intense and unending fascination with anything technological, and his back banners proclaimed his many triumphs in artwork rendered by press-ganged grots. Uftak whistled.
Nice teleporting. You get the idea from Badrook. That git, the Metclawed growled. I'd like to see him teleport a mega gargant into a fight, sogging amateur.
He straightened, raising his chin in what Uftak realised was an attempt to look down his nose, which was more difficult than it had been because the two of them were now of a similar size.
So, Uftak Blackhawk, what's the loot?
He looked around and sniffed.
This don't look nothing special. It's not the ship as such, it's what's on it,
Uftak said.
Or rather, what's underneath it. And I could show you, but there's a problem.
A problem?
The Metclawed said, tilting his head to one side.
What sort of problem?
Uftak took a deep breath. This was it. Even for an orc. Even for an orc as big and strong and smart as he was, this was not something to do lightly. However, since he was by now quite heavy, it was probably all good.
The problem where you're the war boss, he said, flexing his shoulders. And I don't think you should be.
In other species, there might have been more circling and snapping, more jibes and insults. It didn't work that way for orcs. Uftak had laid down a challenge, and the Metclawed wasn't going to let it sit there doing nothing. The biggest Big Mech raised his combi weapon, the ammunition feeds clicking and humming as the autoloaders crammed rounds into breaches, but Uftak was already moving. He sprang forward and swung the snazhammer at the weapon, and the energised head smashed the worky bits into a splintering shower of debris that rained across the Metclawed's knobs, who hurried back out of the way. This wasn't a fight they could get involved in. One way or the other, Uftak or the Metclawed needed to put their opponent down themselves. Uftak adjusted his grip and swung the snazhammer back the other way, trying to take the Metclawed's head off, as he had so many others. But the sheer size of his adversary defeated him. The bulky shoulder plate of the Metclawed's mega armor got in the way, and although the blow sent the war boss staggering sideways, it did little more than crumple and scar the metal. Then the Metclawed snarled and went on the attack. Uftak blocked three blows from the shock hammer because he had no desire to have parts of his body disappearing. That was the sort of thing that could really ruin your day. He dropped the shock rifle. It was too cumbersome for use at this sort of close range, and he needed a free hand. He made a grab for the shock hammer's haft and managed to catch it, then swung the snazhammer at the Metclawed with a toothy grin. Much to his surprise, the Metclawed's free hand emerged from the wreckage of his combi weapon and, with shameless imitation, caught the snazhammer just below the head.
You're going to have to do better than that,
the Metclawed spat, fury written all over his face. He heaved, seeking to force Uftak backwards through sheer mass and strength, but to his visible astonishment, Uftak held his ground.
So are you,
Uftak grunted. Morg's teeth, but the git was strong. Uftak was holding the Metclawed in place for the moment, but it was taking everything he had. How long could he keep it up? The servos in the Metclawed's armour were whining and complaining, but they weren't giving up. Machines generally didn't get tired. They just worked until they broke.
There's no way you can win this,
the Metclawed said, with an ugly laugh.
You ain't strong enough.
Morg cursed him, but the git might be right. Uftak strained again, but he couldn't twist either weapon out of the Metclawed's grip, and it was all he could do to prevent the war boss from managing the same thing. He needed another plan. He needed to do something unexpected. What was the most unexpected thing he could do that might also work? He let go. The Metclawed took a stumbling half-step forward, taken unawares by the sudden lack of resistance. Uftak ducked under the Big Mech's left arm to come up behind him, clasped both arms around the other orc's waist, and put everything he had into one gigantic heave.
Not that long ago, this would have been a futile attempt. Hilariously so, in fact. But Uftak had been fighting, and he'd been winning, and he'd also been pumped full of a very potent mix of drugs that had accelerated an orc's natural propensity to increase in size and strength. He was much stronger now. Strong enough to bodily lift another orc in mega armor, hoist him over his head, and dump him onto the top of his skull on the floor. The noise was cataclysmic. It sounded as if someone had thrown a very large spaceship into a planet made of metal. Uftak fought his way back to his feet, conscious that the left side of his chest was telling him in no uncertain terms that he was a zogging idiot, and it would be having no part of him trying something like that again. But it had been worth it. The entire top of Demeklord's armour was crumpled. The servos and gears were spitting and stuttering, and the big mech's head was somewhat flatter than it had been merely seconds before. And still the git was getting up. You didn't become a war boss if you could be stopped by even a moderate dent in your head. Uftak drew his shooter with his left hand and pointed it at Demeklord's face, but the biggest big mech snarled and lashed out with the shock hammer, and suddenly not only was Uftak's shooter gone, but his hand was as well. He stared at the stump for a moment until his brain caught up with events and told him that the shock hammer had knocked it clean into the warp and was coming for his head next.
Time to go, Demeklord cackled, drawing the shock hammer back for another attack.
His armour was busted and his head was busted even more, but the git still had enough about him to keep on swinging. Uftak didn't even have the snaz hammer. It was well out of his reach, abandoned on the deck where it had slid out of Demeklord's grasp. Uftak closed his fist. The snaz hammer appeared in his hand instantly, and Uftak swung it with a speed and strength born of desperation. The energised hammer surface connected with the haft of the shock hammer and snapped it, sending the whirling triple head into one of the watching knobs and obliterating him. Then, on the backswing, the snaz hammer's chopper side split Demeklord's skull in two. Not even the biggest big mech could withstand that. He fell backwards, stone dead. Uftak leaned on the haft of the snaz hammer for a moment, then eyed the remaining knobs.
Any of you lot got something you want to say?
They looked at each other. No one could have accused them of being geniuses, but they were smart enough to see which way the wind was blowing.
No, boss. Good.
Uftak raised his voice.
Someone get Doc Drosthang. I'm going to need a new hand. Again,
he added bitterly, staring at the stump. This would be the third.
Can I do the thing, boss?
The boffin said eagerly.
Can I do it?
Uftak nodded. Some occasions were momentous enough to be marked by a statement of intent, just so no other git's got ideas. He drew himself up to his full height.
Fire the black cannon.
The boffin pushed a lever up as far as it could go, twiddled three dials to maximum, and slammed his hand down on the biggest, reddest button on the ship's entire control panel. Uftak became aware of a thrumming noise building beneath him. Most of the Star Smasher was built from Humi vessels, of course, because their hulls and their technology were far easier to work with than spiky stuff, not to mention considerably more durable. However, there was one very important bit of Uftak's new ship that retained its spiky origins. The massive dark-like gun mounted under the nose of the Star Smasher discharged a moment later, sending a titanic bolt of sputtering black nothing arcing towards the Mork's hammer. Demeklord's ship was equipped with a force field, as you'd expect from something designed by the biggest big mech himself, but there was only momentary resistance from it before it was burned out and a bolt of negative energy slammed into the superstructure of the Tekwar's flagship. It burned a hole right through the other cruiser, at least until it hit the fuel stores. Then the Mork's hammer came apart in an explosion like a little sun of its own, just as electricity sparked all across the Star Smasher's bridge, and everything went dark.
We got it, Uftak bellowed with glee. Who's the war boss now, eh?
He groped for the switch of the shouter and flicked it.
Who's the war boss now?
There was no reply.
Boffin?
Uftek said. He hoped the tone of his voice adequately communicated his displeasure at not being able to gloat over this display of utmost shootiness.
The cannon knocked out a bunch of systems, boss,
De Boffin's voice replied.
Fried them good and proper.
Uftek digested this.
Worth it,
he grunted.
Worth it,
De Boffin agreed.
Anyway, let's have a look.
There was clanking and the sound of a spanner at work.
All right, should be able to talk to the rest of the fleet now. Can we shoot the black cannon again?
Uftek asked hopefully.
No idea,
De Boffin admitted.
It weren't meant to be hooked up to a ship like this. We can't shoot it right now anyway. Maybe in the future when I get a bit more stuff back online, we might just have to hope the gits remember what it does.
Uftek shrugged.
One shot was good enough. Anyone else can step up to me the old-fashioned way if they want to, and I'll put them on their arse.
He flicked the shouter activation switch again.
Now listen very carefully, you kids,
he began,
because I'm only going to say this once. The Mech Lord was interested in fancy gubbins, and don't get me wrong, you can have a lot of fun with fancy gubbins, but it ain't right to be going around the galaxy with that as your focus. We're orcs, not uni cog boys. So now we're doing things my way. The Boffin's your new head mech boy. Doc Drosvang's your new head pain boy. And this ain't the tech war no more.
He grinned in the darkness, and the red light of the distant star reflected off his teeth.
This is War of Tech, and it's time to set the galaxy to burning.
That was The Big Dacker by Mike Brooks. Read by Harry Myers.
This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2024.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.